A picture is worth a thousand words at times. We just saw a picture that Donna Shank showed us. I show you... ...2016 came to mind as I was contemplating this text. It's a stark contrast between two types of armor, one of this world and one of God. This is a picture of what Paul speaks of, or at least to me, it's a depiction of what Paul speaks of in the letter to the believers in Ephesus. A picture familiar to his audience and us both. Donna showed us a picture of physical metal armor that the audience in Ephesus would have been familiar with, the hard, heavy, protective layer of those ready for battle. The police in this photo are adorned with protective gear from head to toe and shield in between. The recipients of this letter were a minority group and would have looked upon the Romans with fear. And the you that is spoken of in this text is not meant for just the individual, but was meant for the whole Christian community within Ephesus. Although this picture shows Lycia standing alone, we know that she is only a part of a bigger protest in which she was accompanied by others behind her that we do not see, standing firm with feet of peace. The rulers, authorities, systems, and cultures have power that can't be met by an individual. It can only be met by a community that stands firm in God's love, peace, and pursuit of justice. Paul speaks of this battle as being beyond the physical world. Thus, the armor that is spoken of matches its intended battle, speaking of ways of being versus physical pieces. Paul's picture of armor was a way to empower that Christian community to survive in the hostile world that surrounded them. This is a quite mysterious, though, really, the armor of God. How does one do battle with the powers that are not physical in flesh and blood? In the late 1980s, Frank Peretti attempted to imagine what a battle might be like in his two books, This Present Darkness and Piercing the Darkness. He tried to make sense of how this might look, this armor of God, and what this powers of darkness and the battle might look like. However, I think Peretti highlights temptations of viewing this passage as justifying a battle of us against them, of an individual battle that we must fight on our own, that it's a mark of one's faith, and if you do not have enough faith, you do not measure up, or it's a sign of weakness, or a justification of actual force, pitting truths against one another, demonizing whoever the other might be. We live with many messages, practices, and powers within systems and structures that surround us. And I want to offer five powers that I see at work in our lives today. These are in no particular order, nor is it an exhaustive list, But I name these to prime your thinking about what others you may add. So the first one I identify, as we live with a silent caste system in our country where races are treated differently. This began from the beginning when those exploring intended to claim land, killing or enslaving indigenous people, dehumanizing them. Not only that, Africans were kidnapped for slave labor, a system of dehumanization and economic oppression. And although there have been movements within our country throughout our history to rectify this system, we are forever facing again and again the realization that racism is deeply embedded, it is a deeply embedded power that continues to permeate our culture and society. The second one I identify is monetary wealth. Monetary wealth is valued over all other forms of resources. In our structure, wealth is passed from one generation to the next. Therefore, those who have wealth seem to accumulate more and more generation after generation, and those that don't have a hard time doing so. The third one, success. Success is often seen in educational degrees that we accumulate, possessions that we obtain, and the ability to live and then retire when we desire. Number four, individualism. Individualism values accomplishing one's goals and one's own and fulfilling one's wants, even at the expense of others. The fifth one, fear. Fear is a motivating force that feeds insecurity, resulting in boundary making and division. It creates an us and them, which allows battle lines to be drawn. Now, this is a very quick run through of five that I've identified. And again, it's not exhaustive and may be debated, but it is meant to be added to. What are the ways of thinking, believing, knowing that we take for granted and that veil us from seeing how it shapes our actions, our thoughts, our words? Why did I name these five? Well, they are ones that have shaped me and give me power. I have light-colored skin. We own our home and have a savings account. I have several diplomas. I'm confident enough in my own individuality and how I understand the world around me, which tempts me to look down on anyone who sees life differently. Paul's armor described here speaks of a power that is rather disarming to those in power. It's disarming to me. Standing firm in God asks for a surrendering of one's own power and influence. Placing trust in God's righteousness, way of peace, love, and pursuit of justice for the vulnerable and powerless. Security is given in God's saving grace, not in reliance on our own physical strength. This may be disarming to my earthly power, but it is a kind of armor that empowers the vulnerable and empowers the vulnerable places within us. Those who surrender power, our earthly power, are given armor that can be worn. This picture exemplifies power. God's armor is worn with confidence instead of fear, love instead of hate, and trust instead of suspicion. It humanizes those often dehumanized. A temptation for everyone is to see the evil and dark power out there, when in actuality it can be deceptively present in here and in here. I don't know of a denomination yet that hasn't dealt with a split. Somehow we have become able to believe that in our search for truth, we need to purge ourselves of those who we think see things differently, believe things differently, might we say heretical. But I've observed that we seem to be able to accept differences with another denomination more easily than we can accept differences within our own denomination. It's so easy to divide rather than see one another, see our systems within God's love, and be curious about the difference. Virginia Mennonite Conference, of whom Parkview is a part of, released three congregations of their request a couple of weeks ago at our summer assembly due to theological differences. I don't highlight that to point fingers, only to say we continue to find it challenging to know how to structurally hold our differences. At the same time, earlier this year, the conference commissioned a racial justice task force to address racism in our conference structure. And the task force is already addressing some structural dynamics. Caleb Schrock-Hurst, and for those of you who need a face to a name, he is a cellist among us that has provided music throughout our live streaming services, so you may know him more by his cello and his singing than his face right now. But Caleb Schrock-Hurst has been hired at the conference level as a part-time staff position to give leadership as a racial justice and equity leader. He is presently on a bike ride across country with the Center for Sustainable Climate Solutions. But at the end of his ride, he will begin this role and work with the task force and with the congregations within the conference to address the church's complicity in racism, which has gone on far too long. When we find our identity wrapped in God's armor, clothed in God's armor, we stand secure in God's saving grace. We live with hearts of love for the other, different as each may be. We move with peace in every step, engaging with one another with curiosity and care, recognizing the complexity and the mystery of the earthly and heavenly realms. We have work to do, my friends. Some of that work is to face into the dark places while standing in God's presence.